It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Our country wants to open. The governors, it's in their hands, but our country wants to open. And you see what's going on. They have to open. And the people of our country should think of themselves as warriors. Our country has to open.
Our country has to go back to being our country again. You have people that are not going to stand for this. And I understand them very well.
The University of Washington saying we could have 135,000 Americans dead by August. What do you make of those numbers, Mr. President?
A couple of things. First of all, these models have been so wrong from day one, both on the low side and the upside. They've been so wrong. They've been so out of whack. And they keep making new models, and they're wrong. Those models that you're mentioning are talking about without mitigation. Well, we're mitigating, and we've learned to mitigate, but we can be in place, work in place, and also mitigate.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was President Trump yesterday. Yeah, they're making a switch. They're going to be the team headed by Fauci and Dr. Birx is going to be put in a different position. Now, the president is saying that they're going to stay with the White House reviewing all of this, but the focus is changing to getting Americans back to work, and thank goodness for that. I just got an email from a friend of mine in South Florida, and he said six independent restaurants that he regularly visits have all gone out of business. They cannot, even though they could reopen, they can't reopen because they just can't. They've lost so much money, and it's just, this is going to be the reality, and we are going to talk about this more as the show goes on today. Yesterday, the president was in Arizona. He was at a business manufacturer who had stopped everything and started manufacturing all these face masks. Remember that China had sort of hoarded all of the information and all of the equipment and were the big producers of these face masks until the president encouraged local companies like, you know, the producer of MyPillow, the owner of MyPillow, the founder, Mike Lindell, and others. This is a different company in Arizona, but let's listen to the report from John Roberts.
President Trump touching down in Arizona today, touring a Honeywell plant where coveted N95 masks are produced, and meeting with leaders of the Navajo Nation, hit hard by coronavirus.
70 people have lost their lives. The administration is deploying the full resources of the federal government to support and protect our Native American communities in this very grave time of need.
Back in Washington, news that preliminary talks have begun to wind down the White House coronavirus task force. Vice President Mike Pence saying that by Memorial Day or early June, the work of the task force can be turned over to the responsible agencies, most likely led by FEMA. The news drew snark from the Senate Minority Leader.
They really haven't had anyone in charge, except the president, who every day has a different... He spends half his time on whims, medicines that don't work.
President Trump today pushing back against a presentation from FEMA over the weekend. A slideshow including projections that by June, the number of infections will skyrocket to 200,000 per day and that deaths will jump to 3,000 a day.
That's a report with no mitigation. So based on no mitigation, but we're doing a lot of mitigation.
Democrats had criticized the White House for those numbers, insisting it was more proof that President Trump hasn't done enough to expand testing. But even the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, which provided the data, said it wasn't ready for prime time, in a statement saying these preliminary results are not forecasts and it is not accurate to present them as forecasts.
All right, that's at least the first part of John's report yesterday on Fox News. And, of course, you notice that the new model that was leaked to the New York Times, Johns Hopkins, was the research that was used, but they did not issue that report. They said it wasn't time to release it. You see what's happening here. That was leaked to the New York Times, the New York Times, who hates the president and carries the water for the left all the time. You do know that, don't you? So they're trying to, of course, create this impression that there's going to be mass death, and because they don't want you to open up anywhere in the country. I'm going to get into the elections a little bit more in a second, but they are still hoping that they can stall the opening up so that by November we'll have to do mail-in ballots, and that so many of you will be unemployed and miserable that you will blame the president on this, for this, and you will not vote for him. And that's what they're hoping, and that's what they're planning. And, you know, it might work. I don't know. I just don't know what's going to happen with all these states fragmented. We talked yesterday with Adam Brandon of FreedomWorks, and we discussed, they have this report card for all the governors. We discussed about how the opening of many of the red states is going to affect the blue states. And he was saying that, you know, many people who cannot get employment in blue states will flock to red states, and it will have an effect on their economies. The thing of it is, I don't think the left, they have, like, it seems, endless amounts of cash from these wealthy, wealthy people who don't mind spending endless amounts of cash to work their will, not only on the United States, but the world. In general, I think of CNN, who, you know, the business model for any cable company was profit. You know, you sell advertising and you're serving the public. And so you give the public what they want. That's your model. You're trying to sort of assess who your audience is and give them what it is that demographic or group of people would be served best with. But CNN, you know, has really gone off the rails, and they've lost so much listenership, and yet they continue. So the business profit model has just left. I think of Target. When AFA targeted Target and still is boycotting Target, I'm personally absolutely still boycotting Target. I hope that you are too, because they were allowing men into women's dressing rooms. They still are, into bathrooms, dressing rooms. And there have been several assaults around the country. And so when we started the boycott, their stock went down significantly. Do you think they stopped? They did not stop. They doubled down. And so so all that to say that these blue state governors, I'm just not convinced that they're not wired the same way. They think differently. They're thinking about this as a chance to gain power. You heard Joe Biden say yesterday, this is a chance for radical transformation of the country. Wow, let's just salivate. Wow, wow, man, we could just really subject people and have our way, because we can't do it during the in the ballot box. So we'll do it this way. Well, now we're seeing our way clear to sort of, you know, radically transforming, as Barack Obama so eloquently stated when he was running for election. All right, so that's why I think, I'm not sure what's going to happen with these blue states, but I want to get into some more of the news. New York City and New York, they're reporting, you know, oh, now their death rates are going up. The reliable New York. David Lee Miller had a great report last night. I want you to hear it. Then I have a couple of things to point out. Let's listen.
The latest statewide daily death toll has 230 New Yorkers losing their life to the virus. Fighting the virus has devastated the city and state budget. Mayor Bill de Blasio lashed out at President Trump, who in an interview with the New York Post said there would be no financial aid package for blue states such as New York.
This morning, I woke up to this. President of the United States, a former New Yorker who seems to enjoy stabbing his hometown in the back, talking about no bailout for New York.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo urged President Trump not to let partisan politics stand in the way of helping New York recover. He also pushed back on critics, calling for him to accelerate reopening businesses.
How much is a human life worth? That's the real discussion. I say cost of a human life. A human life is priceless, period.
New data reveals more deaths in nursing homes than previously disclosed based on a change in reporting criteria. 1,727 New York nursing home residents who were not tested are now presumed to have died from the disease. New York's health commissioner says 15 kids, most of whom either had or recovered from the virus, had to be hospitalized for a potential life-threatening illness resembling toxic shock or Kawasaki disease.
The strain of the virus that we're actually seeing here in New York is behaving slightly different than the strain that was observed in China.
In just a few hours, for the first time ever, New York subways will not be running round the clock. Between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m., the system will be shut down in order to clean cars and stations to reduce spread of the virus.
I just, let's start with Mayor de Blasio. So the president now, because he will, is opposed to the Congress bailing out New York State and New York City from their years of financial malfeasance for passing laws that has chased businesses out of New York, incredibly chased citizens who are flocking to Florida, North Carolina. Those decisions that have destroyed their tax base, and now they, you know, yet they continue to pay, you know, the same pensions. So they are in a hole, and they've been in a hole for a long time. So now, gee, the coronavirus is a great time to cry, and that's what they've been doing, Cuomo and de Blasio both, about they need money, they need this, they need that. You remember that Candace Owen lives in New York City. She said that she alleged that Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo were using these millions of federal dollars allegedly for hospitals to rebuild the hospitals that they destroyed because of their bad management. And so President Trump has said, no, federal dollars will not be sent to bail you out. We've sent billions of federal dollars to them to help to the coronavirus crisis, but not to bail out your state. But it's not just New York, it's also Illinois, who's been managed so horrifically and still is being managed so horrifically. I told you what? I've told you more than once that when I was still living in Illinois, and this has been several years ago now, the pensions, some of the pensions for retired professors in the Illinois education system were making $300,000 in their retirement years. That they have paid off unions and continue to increase their pensions and their salaries, their pensions primarily, that's what the state, of course, is charged with, until they have gone under. They're creaking under the weight of it. So Illinois, oh, we've got to have a bailout for coronavirus. Of course, the president is saying, and Los Angeles, the same thing. So the president is saying, we're not bailing out these failing states and these cities. And you heard what Bill de Blasio had to say. All right, but the other part that I wanted to go back to, in the midst of that report from David Lee Miller, we heard Andrew Cuomo talking about how he values life. Let's listen again. This is clip 18.
How much is a human life worth? That's the real discussion. I say cost of a human life. A human life is priceless, period.
A human life is priceless. How much is a human life worth? Well, of course, I agree with that, and I wish he really thought that. But this was Governor Cuomo back in January 2019. You remember when New York passed this incredibly horrific abortion bill? And there was cheering. It was like a cheerleader and celebration. And this is what Andrew Cuomo said then. He was a happy man. Clip 17.
Okay, good evening. It is a good evening this evening. Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. Let's give a warm welcome to all the advocates who have worked so long and so hard for so many years. And let's give a round of applause to all the legislators who finally got it done. We took the vote. And we have a special guest of honor. It couldn't come together any better than it's come together today. Sarah Weddington, who argued Roe v. Wade, here today on the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade.
Let's get started. Right, but remember that he just told us how every life is precious. Every life is precious. Of course, he's the same guy that would not allow, that forced nursing homes to take coronavirus positive people in their nursing homes, and now we have all of these deaths. But every life is precious. The hypocrisy is rich. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Spring Share-a-thon is coming May 19th through the 21st.
I am an elderly widow and live alone. I am disabled to a degree, so AFR is an important part of my life. I love all the pastors that help me stay close to the Lord. I listen to a lot of programs as I do my work, and some I sit and take notes on. And I rely on the news that comes on every hour on the hour to keep me truthfully informed on current events. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Listening to American Family Radio has really inspired me a lot. But anytime I listen to the station, it gives me a belief that there are a lot of God-fearing people in this country. And it adds to my knowledge whenever I tune in.
Join us for our 3-day spring share-a-thon, May 19th, 20th, and 21st. And thank you for standing with American Family Radio.
You know, some stories demonstrate the urgent need for God's Word, and I believe that Lilitha's is one of them. This is Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. Lilitha was raised as a Hindu in India. She was forced into an arranged marriage at an early age, and her husband was killed tragically in an accident. Penniless and alone, Lilitha was sold into a prostitution ring for 10,000 Indian rupees, no more than 130 U.S. dollars, and lived in utter hopelessness for many years before a former prostitute introduced her to Jesus, the great lover of her soul. Lilitha said, "Peace and hope flooded my heart," and she learned to share Christ and led more than 100 Hindus to Jesus before dying tragically of AIDS. If this story demonstrates the urgent need of God's Word, you can help. Visit sendbiblesnow.org, sendbiblesnow.org, or call Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is more than just exceptional academic programs, NCAA athletics, and state-of-the-art facilities. They believe in training champions for Christ. They know that where academic excellence and unwavering faith meet, there is liberty. Explore their campus virtually and learn how you can train as a champion for Christ online or on campus by texting Todd to the number 49596. That's Todd to the number 49596. Where's the beef? That's what customers at Wendy's are asking. The national burger chain has taken the beef off the menu in some restaurants in California, South Carolina, and Kentucky. Wendy's takes pride in its slogan, fresh, never frozen, but that's a big problem when the supply lines are disrupted. And that's exactly what's happened. Meat shortages on account of the virus. Empty meat counters are reported in supermarkets across the country. Kroger, the nation's largest supermarket chain, is limiting meat purchases at some of its stores, and Costco is doing the same. The vegan crowd must be overjoyed, no doubt hoping Americans will fundamentally transform their diets, replacing delicious, juicy cheeseburgers with veggie burgers made from lawn clippings. You know, I tried tofu once by accident, and in the words of Scarlett O'Hara, "As God is my witness, I'll never eat tofu again." I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, so do you remember just a few minutes ago when we heard that report about what's happening in New York? The one thing I did not address, they have this uptick in deaths. You heard that. The death rate's up. Oh, no. Now things are worse. The death rate is up. But did you hear that this is out of nursing homes? It's 727 more cases they just counted. So suddenly their numbers are up. But did you hear the little part that said these people that died were not tested, but they're presumed to have died of coronavirus? They're just presumed to. And because of that, you know, then, it's just worse. It's worse in New York. And so, no, we can't open up because it's even worse because we have more deaths because they weren't tested, but we just presumed that they were coronavirus positive. It's just these are the games that we are experiencing. And I want to just point out another story. This is amazing. Just I'll be as clear as I know how to be. Do you remember that we use these models out of Imperial College? That's the one that Dr. Fauci and Deborah Birx were so waxing eloquent about. And We saw the professor, Neil Ferguson, who is from the UK, works at Imperial College, the one that produced this study, this model. He's been on television a lot telling us how many thousands of people are going to be killed and are going to die from the virus if we don't do what he says, if we don't shut down. As a result, the United Kingdom shut way, way down, more than we're shut down. And initially, they were doing more following the path of Germany, which never did really shut down, which, by the way, has been very successful in Germany and Sweden, but Great Britain, not so much, because they listened to Professor Neil Ferguson, as did Dr. Fauci for our country. So here's the story on Professor Neil Ferguson. He previously warned that the UK could see 500,000 deaths if it didn't implement lockdown. His advice, through a report he helped produce at the Imperial College, is thought to have led to the lockdown. Professor Ferguson had been a vocal supporter of lockdown, continuing to tell the public to follow the restrictions. However, he has now admitted that he allowed his married lover to travel across London to visit him during the shutdown. The lover is 38. She lives with her husband and two children on the south side of London, and so she's been visiting him. Now he's been found out. He's apologizing. But, of course, all of Britain is shut down. He was not so concerned about his own life. Of course, what's good for thee is not good for me. And this is what we've been saying. This is really, really unconscionable. Piers Morgan tweeted, unbelievable and shocking. So the government is following the science of scientists who don't even follow their own science. What a shameful shambles. Professor Ferguson's excuse is he thought he was immune from COVID-19 after having it, despite there being zero scientific proof people who've actually had it actually get immunity. And this guy's the number one expert on whom the government is basing its entire coronavirus strategy. All right, so that is just the latest. Neil Ferguson, if you haven't heard it, you'll be hearing it today. This is the story. That one was the Daily Mail Online. So it just, the hypocrisy continues. It's just, it really is shocking. It really is shocking. And we have so many people scared to death for their lives. I want to bring you just a report about that in just a few minutes. But meanwhile, I want to go back to something that's happening in Congress that's very, very important. The first hearing in the Senate took place yesterday, and it was a hearing for John Ratcliffe, who's been Congressman John Ratcliffe, who's been nominated to be the Director of National Intelligence. Remember, he was nominated last year. It may not even been a year. The time passes so fast with these things, but you remember that they slammed him for being, you know, ill-prepared. He wasn't the right person. They claimed he had overstated his resume, and John withdrew because he just didn't want to go through that fight. In fact, the president suggested to him that he withdraw. Well, I just want to remind you who John is. John was one of the powerhouse Republican congressmen in that committee who were grilling not the whistleblower, because the whistleblower never came forward, but Alex Vindman came forward, and so did Gordon Sondland, who was the ambassador to Ukraine. And I want you to hear Congressman Ratcliffe interrogating Gordon Sondland in that hearing, just so you can remember who it is that's being nominated for this important post. Let's listen.
On May 23rd, you had a group meeting that included what you called a vanilla request about ending corruption involving Ukrainian oligarchs, correct?
Correct.
On July 25th, you called President Trump to say you were on your way to Ukraine, but nothing of substance occurred on that call, correct?
Correct.
On July 26th, you had a five-minute call at a restaurant that you didn't originally remember because it, according to your statement this morning, quote, did not strike me as significant at the time, end quote, but once refreshed, recalled that the primary purpose was a rapper named ASAP Rocky, correct?
Correct.
And on September 9th, and most importantly, reading from your deposition, you called President Trump to ask him, what do you want from Ukraine? He responded, I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. I want Zelensky to do the right thing. I want him to do what he ran on. And what he ran on was fighting corruption, correct?
Correct.
And then lastly, on October 2nd, in a random in-person meeting that you had at an event for the Finnish president, you ran into President Trump and advised him that you'd been called to testify before Congress, and he said to you, good, go tell the truth.
That's correct.
All right. And that is the entirety of your recollection of your direct communications with President Trump about these matters.
I may have had another call or meeting or two. I wish Mr. Ratcliffe I had the record.
I understand. But this is what you recall.
This is what I recall.
Okay. So Stop me if there's anything sinister or nefarious in any of this. A vanilla request about corruption, a call to say I'm on my way to Ukraine, a five-minute call you didn't remember is significant, but its primary purpose was to discuss a wrapper, a call that you made where the president said, I want nothing, I want no quid pro quo, I want Zelensky to do the right thing, I want him to do what he ran on, and him telling you to go tell Congress the truth. Anything sinister or nefarious about any of that?
Not the way you present it.
Okay, and that is the truth as you've presented it, correct?
Correct.
All right, why that's important, Ambassador Sondland, is because none of that is hearsay. None of that is speculation. None of that is opinion. That is direct evidence. And ultimately, that is what, if this proceeds to the Senate, they're going to care about. Unlike this proceeding, which has been based on largely speculation and presumption and opinion, this is direct testimony and direct evidence. And to that point, none of that included evidence about the Bidens, and none of that included evidence about military assistance, because President Trump never mentioned either of those to you, correct?
That's correct.
All right.
All right. So that, I just wanted you to remember who John is. He was outstanding. We played a lot of clips during that time. And this was all surrounding that so-called whistleblower, which was a complete sham. Honestly, that the inspector general that the so-called whistleblower reported to was fired after that, replaced. I think he was fired. He was removed from the position at the very least because he allowed that complaint to go through when it had breached all of the protocols, that there was no direct knowledge. It was all hearsay. It was just a horrendous thing, and it took months to take care of that. And so you can imagine now that the Democrats in the Senate committee hearing John Ratcliffe's testimony yesterday are not crazy about him being the director of national intelligence. They're worried about it. John Warner weighed in yesterday, clip 13.
I don't see what has changed since last summer when the president decided not to proceed with your nomination over concerns about your inexperience, partisanship, and past statements that seem to embellish your record.
If confirmed as DNI, you have my commitment to deliver timely, accurate, and objective intelligence and to speak truth to power, be that with Congress or within the administration. Let me be very clear. Regardless of what anyone wants our intelligence to reflect, the intelligence I will provide, if confirmed, will not be impacted or altered as a result of outside influence.
All right, so that was his testimony, at least in part, yesterday. Right now, the acting director of is Richard Grenell. He is the current ambassador to Germany, and he's kind of running double duty. And he's in the process of reordering the intelligence agencies, and they are having a fit. I don't know what that means. I can't give you more detail than that right now. Let's just say that they hate Richard Grenell. And so he's meanwhile kind of trying to mix things up while the president has nominated John Ratcliffe to come in and actually take over. I actually think it's brilliant. And we'll see. I think my understanding is that all the Republican senators are now on board with John Ratcliffe. Maybe they finally understood. I think really if anything has come from this, if there's looking for some good, it is that some of those old guard senators, those fossils on the Hill, even Mitch McConnell, they have finally been shaken. They finally, I think, seen what they're up against. And I would imagine that time at home has caused them to sober up as well, because they've seen the reality of what it is we're dealing with and how dangerous things are. So that the country will be in good hands if John Ratcliffe is confirmed, as we think he will be. Meanwhile, John Roberts says, you know, so that whistleblower incident, remember how horrific that was? By the way, we're learning now that Barack Obama and his office weighed in criticizing Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson, wanted information about these Ukraine-related meetings. They wanted Obama administration records. Well, the Barack Obama retired president weighed in harshly criticizing them, objecting to any investigation into Joe Biden and his son, Hunter. And so, but, you know, the thing that is often not said, and I'm not the first, you've heard others say that, but I haven't said it, I guess, enough, is that all of this corruption, this corruption that seems too nice, this attempt to overthrow and reconstruct unlawfully the government of the United States, every branch, to subvert, overtake, to force a change in this country that will leave her reeling and gut her, what happened under Barack Obama. It was these individuals working under him, but he was all about it. Trust me. you know, the FBI meetings. He was in those meetings right after the FBI sent their investigators in to interrogate Michael Flynn. Barack Obama was in that meeting following. He was in the meeting that plotted sending them in. And so, you know, he's not exactly an armchair quarterback. He was right in the middle of it, but no one dares mention his name because he's still, you know, our beloved Barack, but for no good reason from my perspective. All right, so yesterday John Roberts talked about another whistleblower. Now, this came up a couple of months ago. It's the assistant director of Health and Human Services. Now, let me just say, Alex Azar is the head of Health and Human Services. You've heard me mention him. Roger Severino works under him. Roger was our guest a couple of weeks ago. Under Alex Azar and Roger Severino in the Division of Civil Rights, they've done some incredible things, especially on the issue of the sanctity of human life, but also on the transgender issue. So very controversial, very bold. They've done some incredible things with regulations, so you can imagine that they're not very well liked. So now here comes this whistleblower, Dr. Bright, who was an assistant to Alex Azar, already in place when he came in, Alex appointed by the President Trump. So suddenly, Dr. Bright gets, moved, and John mentions it yesterday, and I want to tell you something about it. Here's John Roberts on Fox First, clip two.
Democrats also taking aim at the president's announcement that he would make Dr. Anthony Fauci available to the Senate, but not the House. President Trump today saying, why would he?
The House is a setup. The House is a bunch of Trump haters. They put every Trump hater on the committee, the same old stuff.
One person who will be testifying before the House is the government's former head of vaccine development. Today, former HHS Deputy Secretary Dr. Rick Bright filed a whistleblower complaint against the administration. Bright claiming he was retaliated against for opposing spending on unproven COVID therapies like chloroquine. In a lengthy complaint and dozens of pages of email exchanges, Bright claims he has evidence the government was engaged in cronyism, supporting therapies with a political connection and not supporting what might work.
Scientists need strong leadership, too. Leaders who refrain from pressuring them to ignore science, to bend the rules, and to prioritize politics above all else. It is inappropriate to place dedicated scientists in crosshairs.
All right. So who is Rick Bright? You're going to be hearing more about this. In a nutshell, they have now... He is now a whistleblower, which I'm confident the left is hoping can gain steam with his complaints about being placed in another agency. By the way, it's perfectly legal, perfectly fine. The president has every right. The executive can move people around at their will. And so he can be removed and transferred. He was transferred, but he doesn't like the spot he's in, and he's now whistleblowing, alleged whistleblower. As soon as he was demoted, he calls it a demotion. He hired, guess who he hired to defend him in this suit? It happened to be the team that defended Christine Blasey Ford, or represented her, I should say. So that would be Deborah Katz and Lisa Banks, two of the most radical of radicals when it comes to defense lawyering. And so he's retained them. I'm sure there's no bias here. By the way, Rick Bright, the whistleblower, was a registered Democrat. Is a registered Democrat. He was the director of the Biomedical Advanced Research Development Authority. Excuse me. He also, he has called on the HHS Health and Human Services Inspector General to investigate the manner in which this administration has politicized the work of BARDA and has pressured me and other conscientious scientists to fund companies with political connections and efforts that lack scientific effort. He's basically, his suit and his complaint is based on what he claims is this forcing of hydroxychloroquine and the manufacture of it on the coronavirus thing. A report just came out yesterday. I wish I had time to read this. The role of hydroxychloroquine in the prevention and fight against coronavirus was the subject of a study published in the International Journal of Microbial. And so haven't got time to read this. Let's just say incredible results. Incredible results. It still is getting very good results. You're not hearing that in the news right now. But this will be interesting as Rick Bright tries to make his case against the president as a whistleblower. I have lots to tell you when we return, so please stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
But if you show partiality, you're committing sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. There is way more evidence to support the sexual assault allegations made against Joe Biden than there ever was against Justice Brett Kavanaugh. 30-year-old assault allegations raised during an election year should give pause to any prudent person. But if you oppose Brett Kavanaugh because of the accusations against him, how could you now be silent or even support Joe Biden? Nevertheless, the former hashtag Believe All Women crowd who sought to burn Brett Kavanaugh at the stake are not only supporting Joe Biden, they're endorsing him for president. Me too. Principled movement or political power play?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
What are you doing when the stress of the corona crisis is overwhelming? Are you drinking, gorging on pleasure, or watching TV to escape? When these stress relievers wear off, the problem is still there. The Bible says, when my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. In other words, Jesus wants to help us when the storm is raging. He offers peace and strength in the crisis. Why not take a moment now and ask Him to help you? You'll be glad you did. I'm Pastor John Miller. Visit me at churchontherock.org.
The AFA Journal helps you stay in touch with issues of the day. Articles by award-winning writers open your eyes with different perspectives. Shorter pieces document current trends. You'll find monthly columns by financial expert Dan Celia and AFA President Tim Wildman. Even the ads put you in touch with various AFA departments and other ministry organizations. Subscribe to the AFA Journal and stay up to date on the American Family Association and the culture war when you visit afajournal.org.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. A new and unproven drug called Remdesivir has been anointed as the standard of care in treating victims of the Chinese virus. Yet hydroxychloroquine, or HCQ, has been proven effective against corona and has been used since 1944 and is virtually free of side effects. You can get a generic prescription at Fred Meyer for $14.95. Remdesivir costs $4,500 for a course of treatment, and one of its side effects is liver failure. So why Remdesivir? No pharmaceutical company will make any money off HCQ, but Gilead Sciences, which spent $2.5 million lobbying the White House in the last 3 months, will make $2 billion off Remdesivir. That may be the only explanation we need.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. One of the most impressive men in the Trump administration is Deputy National Security Advisor Matthew Pottinger, a former journalist in Beijing and combat Marine. He is today one of the president's most knowledgeable and robust China experts. Mr. Pottinger's skills were on display in a speech delivered in fluent Mandarin on Monday to a University of Virginia audience, but it was clearly intended for the people of China, too. He subtly appealed for them to draw on, quote, traditional Chinese ideals about virtuous leadership, unquote, in repudiating the CCP's totalitarian repression. The Pottinger address will surely infuriate the thugs of the Communist Party. Like all bullies, they are good at dishing out incitement but are hypersensitive about taking it. Here's hoping President Trump will pile on with a Reagan-esque evil empire speech of his own, perhaps like Matt Pottinger's with Chinese characteristics. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The president seems to be saying that it's safe to go to the parks and the beaches. Does that argument make any sense to you?
No, and I think in some ways it really betrays the really hundreds of thousands of people in the United States who work in hospitals day and night to try and save lives. This is coming from the top, and it's incredibly destructive. Everyone in medicine knows this.
Everyone in medicine knows this, except for the experts that I've been playing you. They don't agree with that. In fact, more and more, I couldn't even begin to get to the articles today about people talking about how this has been a huge mistake. It's just been an overreaction. It's very, very dangerous. In fact, Alex Berenson, who is the New York Times reporter, who wrote the book Exposing Marijuana, and Alex, you know, was my guest. We talked, I guess, last January about his new book, and he's been the one in New York City, used to be, again, a New York Times reporter, his wife is a doctor, speaking out left and right about just going crazy, really, about what's happening in New York. I wish I had time to play for you some of the many things he said, but one of the things he wrote about on Fox just this morning, I guess it came out, he's been sort of following the results of people being so scared by the shutdown. And I thought these stories were pretty interesting. He writes about a college student in Colorado, explained that when he returned home in March, he expected the worst. He said, "My brother and I moved to our house in South Denver. We accepted the fact that things could get ugly pretty quick, and it would be best if we were at home together. However, over the next several weeks, as the student realized that his actual risk of death from the coronavirus was very low, and that his parents also were at a low risk, he became increasingly frustrated. My parents all this time had been disinfecting packages left by Amazon and ordering groceries, greeting the delivery driver in an N95 mask. My parents are both under 65 and have no underlying health conditions. After seeing results from a study of people in California that suggested death rates from the coronavirus were far lower than had been reported, the student decided to visit friends. My parents called me, and I told them I was at my friend's house and they shouldn't be worried. They told him to come home, but he had been drinking and he didn't want to drive. What happened next shocked me. They called the police on me. Police officers woke up my friend's dad after shining a spotlight in their bedroom window. That night, the student and his brother left their home, and he hasn't spoken to his parents in several weeks. Another story. New York City resident who asked not to be identified explained how his sister fled the city for a house in New Jersey and rejected his efforts to visit her. This past weekend, we were able to get to New Jersey for an hour of outdoor time. My sister, a normally fit, energetic, smiling woman, was nothing more than a pensive, pale, thin, and scared shell. Her daughter and son, both elementary school aged, are suffering from fear. As the social one who would normally walk around New York City saying hi to just about anyone, he has become cautious and despondent. A woman in Texas wrote to say that a good friend is too frightened to leave the house. She won't go out for herself or allow anyone in who might bring the infection. She has two boys, 6 and 10, and she allows them to play, quote-unquote, with the neighbors, but they must stay on opposite sides of the street. So that's just a tiny bit of Alex's story this morning on how this is affecting people. And we know that, look, I think I said, I know I have, maybe twice, and I will repeat. As a Christian, I'm going to speak to you as those of you that are Christians, and those of you who aren't, just listen. We have a very different kind of God who has created and wired us to be in His image. And His image is relational. As odd as that sounds, when you think of Buddha, you don't think of relationship. When you think of Allah, you don't think of Him buddying around with His, subordinates. But our God, Jehovah, is a God of relationship. Interesting, you know, when He created Adam and Eve, He walked with them every day. That was, God wanted to do that. He wanted to be with Adam and Eve. He walked with them every day in this perfect environment, the garden that He created for them. And I thought recently as I was reading Genesis how heartbroken God must have been when Adam and Eve disobeyed Him, and then He had to, because God cannot have communion with sin, He had to throw them out of the garden. And it wasn't just a punishment for them, it was a punishment for Him, how He must have loved them. And so we know that one of the chief key verses in the New Testament is that for God so loved the world that He gave His precious, His Son that He loved relationally. He loved His Son. That's an emphasis in Scripture. They were very close. They were one in spirit. They were one. Jesus said, "I do the will of my Father. What He says, I do." They were close. They loved each other. How God must have grieved when Jesus died on the cross and that communion with His Son had to be broken so that His Son could take on the sin of the world. And so then, immediately, when Jesus completes that work on the cross, it became all about relationship. Believers, sharing. We were to have fellowship. We were to not forsake fellowship. We were to have communion. We were to be one. Relationship is so important, being together face to face. That's why being at home on your computer is not enough. It is not the way you are designed by God to worship, like through a box, not face to face, accountability, love, doing life together. That's a new concept for me. To be honest with you, I'm beginning to understand that more deeply, because we are not wired to be all by ourselves. We are wired for fellowship and patterned after our Heavenly Father. And why do you think that when a criminal commits a terrible crime, they're put in solitary confinement? Well, wouldn't that be kind of cool? For some of you who think this is great, wouldn't it be nice to be all by yourself? Why wouldn't that be a good thing? It's because sanity begins to come in. Prisoners of war are kept in solitary confinement. Sanity begins to be lost when we are by ourselves without anyone else all the time. And so this whole business of being shut down, locked down, separated, think about that in terms of, obviously if you have leprosy or if you have some very contagious thing, I am not saying it's never appropriate to be isolated, but I'm saying in the broader scope of things, this is a bridge too far, and it goes against God's nature and the nature of the men and women he has created. We are not wired to be alone. And so that's why we're seeing all kinds of responses to this. I want to tell you that the couple that I had on Monday, Heather and Jay Allen, who own that store in Owego, Michigan, they defied the Governor Whitmer's orders on Friday and opened their store. So did all the other stores, as I understand it, in Owego. And I also understand that a lot of listeners to this show drove over to Owego to support Heather and Jay and shop in that store. I think that is just so cool. And so Heather and Jay, that's their livelihood. They owe like a million plus mortgage on that building that they're refurbishing. And now suddenly the stores can't be opened, and that hasn't changed their obligation to pay. Jay is a professional fishing guide, and the governor has ordered him not to take people out. He was threatened with taking his boat if he acted on that. So their entire income, they're desperate. And that reminds me of a woman in Texas. By the way, that article was written up in Breitbart just yesterday, and we'll put that on our Facebook page by Kyle Olson, the story of what's happening to Heather and Jay up in Michigan. So we'll put that, again, that article on our Facebook page. Now, in Dallas, there was a Shelley Luther, who was a salon owner. She was ordered to shut down, and she did shut down for about a month. But then she opened up in defiance of the orders of the Dallas authorities. And so she was arrested, and she went before the court. And I want you to hear what she had to say yesterday. In her defense, she's been sent to jail now for 7 days. And this is what she said, Shelley Luther, to the judge yesterday in court, clip 14.
I have to disagree with you, sir, when you say that I'm selfish, because feeding my kids is not selfish. I have hairstylists that are going hungry because they'd rather feed their kids. So, sir, if you think the law is more important than kids getting fed, then please go ahead with your decision, but I am not going to shut the salon.
All right, so Shelley now has to spend 7 days in jail. And that's in Dallas, and they are actually going to be opening up salons on May the 8th. So what, that's 2 days from now? But she defied the orders. Maybe tomorrow we'll open the phone lines to talk about civil disobedience. I just think you have to think very hard and long before you're going to do something like that. No question about it. I think basically Christians are to follow the guidelines of Romans 13 to obey the government. But there are times when Jesus clearly said we have to obey God rather than man. And that's the decision that has to be made by so many individuals. And that is the decision that lots of individuals are making at great, great expense to themselves. I just told you that my friend in South Florida, six of the small restaurants or privately owned restaurants that he frequents, now that they can be open, they're out of business. They can't survive. I went to a store, actually it was a Dunkin' Donuts, a couple of days ago, and the owner had, it was her and one other person, and they were just, they were so cheerful. It really was sweet. Cheerful, but absolutely just two of them trying to keep it all together. And she said to me, I cannot find people to work. Because employees, a lot of these low-wage employees, hourly employees, some, a lot of them are getting unemployment now. There's no incentive to go back. And the way that bill was written, the second tranche of bills, was that they would get more money by not working than by working. So this is another blow, you know, to business. You know, I was just thinking, some of you might want to consider going, and that's just a thought, that I thought about this myself. If I were not, you know, working at this job, I think I would really do this. I felt like jumping across the counter, putting on an apron, and helping that lady in Dunkin' Donuts. Why couldn't you volunteer in a store? Why couldn't you do that? And just, you know, somebody that you know, some store that you love, some product that you love, and you want to help them, and they are having trouble getting help, go learn the business with them. And you know, if you can, if you've got a steady pension, or if you've got income coming in from other sources, don't ask for money. Just go in and help them. Wouldn't that be something? Anyway, just a suggestion. I have other things I wanted to tell you. I've got just a few minutes left. This is amazing. Joe Biden, in this Tara Reid accusation, the girl that said he sexually abused her back in the late, in the mid-90s, you know the story, and I don't have time to repeat all of it. But let's just say that Joe Biden's records have gone on complete lockdown. While he feigns that he wants those to be released, everything is locked down. The Secretary of the Senate will not release her records, and the University of Delaware is saying they will not release their records. So, you know, it's a, kind of the best of both worlds, isn't it, that Joe Biden's claiming he wants them released, but the entities won't release them. There are details, more details about that, and I'm sure we'll hear about it, but I just don't think that sounds quite kosher. Do you? Now, here's a stunner. This is a letter to the editor from, I believe, on the New York Times. The New York Times came out with an editorial saying that they thought Joe Biden, this situation should be investigated, because they're getting such blowback about how they handled the Kavanaugh accusations and the how they handled the Kavanaugh women who came out and accused him versus how they're treating Tara Reid. And they said, finally, they said, well, perhaps maybe it should be investigated. This is a letter to the editor, but it's not just a person. It's not just Joe Blow, John Smith, who likes to read the New York Times, or your mother, Mary, or your aunt, Elsie. It's not anybody like that. This is Martin Tolchin from Alexandria, Virginia. He is the former member of the New York Times Washington Bureau and a founder of Politico. And this is what he says to the editor. I totally disagree with this editorial. I don't want an investigation. I want a coronation of Joe Biden. Would he make a great president? Unlikely. Would he make a good president? Good enough. Would he make a better president than the present occupant? Absolutely. I don't want justice, whatever that might be. I want a win. The removal of Donald Trump from office, and Mr. Biden is our best chance. Suppose an investigation reveals damaging information concerning his relationship with Tara Reid or something else, and Mr. Biden loses the nomination to Senator Bernie Sanders or someone else with a minimal chance of defeating Mr. Trump. Should we risk, really, the possibility? So, no investigation. I want a coronation. This is from a writer, a former writer of the New York Times Washington Bureau and the founder of Politico. You think these journalists are objective? Did you still think maybe they might be? Well, they are not, and they haven't been for a long time. And so it continues. All right, well, it's been a pleasure having this hour with you. I hope it's just not too much. I hope that you can absorb at least some of what I said. You remember that you can listen to it by podcast. Oh, by the way, on our Facebook page is a link to a seminar about how to handle marriage during this difficult time. You'll want to look. Sandy Rios in the Morning, AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.